Right, everybody. Look at us. We're streaming. We're back in it. We're coming back. Stronger than ever. I do a sound check. Sweet. Stream can hear me. This is a great place to be in that it's been a while since I've streamed and recorded a podcast. So glad things have held up since my kids have actually had more access to the computer than I have. Outside of work stuff and all that. So that's all well and good. But I have had zero luck just kind of coordinating and getting podcasts together, just personal circumstances and everything, and figuring out who I am as a podcaster and the state of things and figuring out how things go, especially because collegiate isn't around. And honestly, I found myself struggling to want to follow a lot of professional esports because that ecosystem is what it is. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting stories out there. There's some developments within professional esports of this game, that game going on, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's all fun and it's all good. And, but without the idea of majors coming in and having it all be online, I found myself being less interested in it, and it's kind of sad because it's more than just the in-person events and everything, right? It's that camaraderie from playing games together, and you know, it just hasn't felt the same without that promise of an in-person event that what all the efforts culminate into, right? So it's been a little difficult for me to get into it, and also just the balance of work life and podcasting and then being able to consume all of that esports goodness that's going on. It's not as much as I would like, and I can see what I can do to fix that, but some other things have to give. And you know what? I've enjoyed playing games more. I have enjoyed not pushing myself until 2 a.m. every night. And so I'm finding that place to call my own, that my place in this new world order, so to speak. And some of you may have actually seen how I do that, and or how I have been doing that, which is with going to be a regular stream at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the channel, 1:37 p.m. on the show Good Game, which is also, you know what, a huge step for me in terms of content creation, in that I'm making content for someone else and I'm bringing my own perspective and my own opinions to the table. Come on, green screen, work with me. You're not that wobbly. Boo. I think it's going to be a little weird on me. Oh well. But the point of this podcast is just to kind of talk about things. And like I was mentioning, the Good Game podcast, we've already had some huge guests on here. So the two, I believe it's the co-founders of Vayner Gaming, who have gone through Vayner Sports and Vayner Media, which also, as you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, serial entrepreneur, yada, 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 part-time owner of the Minnesota Rocker, that's who it is. Yep, I remembered. It's been a while since I watched some COD esports. So to kind of be in that group and be asked to co-host this interview podcast and gaming esports kind of topics, it was one, a privilege, and two, a huge compliment. And so I'm taking these compliments as they come and figuring out how I can work into those opportunities. So still making podcast content, and I'm going to try and see how I can make some more stuff in that same vein. I might even start streaming these podcasts on their channel or get hosted by their channel so I can get some more exposure that way. So there's more for us to do here. And honestly, if I can get someone to help do some clips and help get my branding out there and all that stuff, I am all in on making more content, doing more podcasts, and making time to make that work. But right now, it's just, this is the opportunity that's at hand, and so I'm taking it, doing what I can, and that's how we go. So we've had co-founders from Vayner Sports or Vayner Gaming on there. We've had Jason Lake, who I totally geeked out on, and was just so nerdy. And you can ask my wife if you see her online, just how giddy I was after that and before that. It's just, it's a huge privilege to be able to talk to someone like Jason and get to the heart of it and get some really awesome answers from him. And just, I mean, also I'll have to admit that there was the invite to go down to the Complexity, the GameStop Performance Center, which I'm going to have that clip. I have the context, the other co-host, they heard it. It's true. It's real. It will happen at some point. And when the main host kicks in, oh yeah, we got to get Gary down there too. I'm like, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair. I wouldn't be on Good Game if it wasn't for Gary V and being able to inspire me when I needed it most and understanding that my role changes as my needs change. So to be here in this spot, making a podcast, feeling comfortable talking to the void and making this podcast, it's a really cool feeling to know that I don't really care. I have a little bit of agenda written up. I didn't write everything out because, you know, some of those hot takes are some of the best. And where the mind goes, I'm treating this almost like a form of journaling, which has been something I've really gotten into over the last couple months, actually, reading a lot of Ryan Holiday, reading or listening to Ryan Holiday's books, Ego is the Enemy, Obstacle is the Way, Stillness is the Key, stuff like that. I think I forget, I might be misremembering that last name and that last title, but Ryan Holiday, great, solid books to listen to. The audiobooks are stellar as well, so can't help but recommend those. And so being more introspective through journaling and going for a lot of walks, all of that has just been very therapeutic for me in this heavily invested time at home. So that's all been good for me, and like I owe a lot of that to just being inspired and getting the right content at the right time that caused some change. So here's to more change and accepting how things go. But there was a couple of things I wanted to bring up as in spirit of the AFK episodes, as I used to do. Well, I say used to do, but I really started it in like February, January time, something like that. One of the hot take, well, it's not even a hot take. This is a real take. This is from Flizzy Fletch, director of Illinois Wesleyan Esports. He says in a tweet, hot take, I think the mentality that esports is a 24/7, 365 job is incredibly unhealthy and shouldn't be encouraged. Do you have to make a sacrifice? Do you have to make sacrifices? Yes. Are you going to have to give up holidays and special events? Yes. Should you burn yourself out pursuing this? Absolutely not. Hops, the esports coordinator for Washington State University, chimed in and thought that this is absolutely not a hot take. This is just the reality of it. He says, right now we are in the 1960s, rub some dirt in it mentality that other sports have had. And Dr. Haskell, the head coach at Boise State University, just says, preach. And we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast before, so if we're being redundant, that's fine. Because in this time when everyone has more time at home, more time to invest in their grind, more time to be creating content, if that's where their energy allows them to be, it's been really apparent. And I mean, mental health has just been a huge topic the last 5 months, for sure. So to think that esports players who have 8-hour days, 6-hour days of classes, and then they go into meals, they go into their jobs, they go into their other social circles, and then they have days and days and days of hours and hours and hours of practice, and then they go into their solo queue grind, their streaming grind, trying to make something else happen for themselves, and it's all well and good, but it's not usually not in balance, which is why I'm so excited for It's teams like Northeastern University and ECPI. They all institute actual practice hours, and they try and monitor sleep. They try and make sure that players aren't spending too much time just in front of their screen and grinding themselves to a bone. They have to be there for a team mentality. They have to have good sleep for good health, good mental health, all of that. So I think that that's why I like a lot of collegiate teams really taking concern over the player of their health, the health of their players, is because that's a relatively ground level infrastructure for collegiate, and it's just starting to really make its way into professional esports at a notable level. Now, I mean, like teams like C9, TSM, what else am I missing? NRG, like they've been around long enough that they've had this level of stuff, but they haven't had the complexity suite deal where it's like, here's your nutritionist, here's your physical therapist, here's your recovery therapist, here's your everything. Like, here's your facilities, here's your relaxation room, all that kind of stuff. So as we start moving into that, where we're really getting into the science of esports and the science of understanding recovery and what physical training this is for esports, like we have to kind of define that path for ourselves. But for collegiate to be taking that so seriously already is a big deal, and it's something that I love the fact that these directors, coaches, coordinators are all very much aware of, is how much they want to formalize a healthy approach to this. And health, mental health, like I said, has been a huge topic the last 5 months as everyone's grown accustomed to their four walls at home. It's important that for the things that you're grinding on, the things that you are hustling on, the things that you just have a passion for, that they don't just turn into another job, another way of holding yourself, not just accountable, but a way of holding yourself to a standard that can't be met anymore because it's what you were doing, not what you can do now. I think more of that conversation needs to happen so everyone's aware of where their mental health is really at. And yeah, right now there's a lot of students and a lot of esports athletes out there who are grinding because they want to be on 100 Thieves, they want to make content, they want to play professionally, and there's everyone in the background. They want to be a TO, they want to be a producer, they want to be a graphic designer, and they're crushing themselves to get there, but they want to do it for esports, which is still the Wild West. Absolutely still the Wild West. So there's no real accounting for how you're going to get into the industry other than dumb luck and right place, right time, some exceptional talent. You hit the right wave and you ride it. Like it's very similar and very common storyline. You hit it just right and you take it from there because it's in your hands once you've been given that opportunity. And things like jobs aren't really that hard to get. Esports maybe hard enough just because it's still young and growing, but if it's still projected to break $1 billion this year, so as an industry that's a big mile marker of consideration of how legitimate this ecosystem is. So thinking on that, it's all the more important that we have to be looking at the health of these players, and the companies, the teams have to be looking at this. And this is something Jason Lake talked about on GG, is that a lot of the esports athletes' careers are relatively short, 5, 6, 7 years, except for some of the oldest or the ones who are the most well taken care of, the most prominent ones. And so those ones tend to have longer careers. And think about it. Like, you have high school basketball players going straight into the draft. You have NFL players spending a couple years in college and then going into the draft. And so you're looking at 22-year-olds that are playing until their mid-30s, some like hardcore people into their 40s. and those careers are relatively short, and but still esports has been shorter, and those people have to figure out what they're doing with even less money than traditional sport athletes have when they retire, and you still have to be smart about that. So what you're seeing is a lot of these players becoming going to teams as with official jobs. Bakery and Dignitas is probably my favorite example, because he did this 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, I think. And so he moved into an official position, while others are starting to move more into that content creation realm and getting sponsorships and being a content creator for their team or for another brand. And that's totally fine. And I think more athletes need to be prioritizing that future for themselves, almost like just having a savings account, being able to put money away for that, being able to save for a rainy day. I hope they have their 401ks in order, all that kind of stuff. But that all comes from maturity of the industry. And we're not quite there yet. And knowing that professional esports athletes are suffering burnout left, right, and center at all times, except for the ones who can afford the best care, the best teams, who can get that sweet deal, it's still hard to make sure that the players are all getting the right treatment. And when you go down to collegiate, when it's a lot easier for these students to really do anything and everything that they want whenever they want when it comes to their game of choice, it's harder to control and it's harder to coach around until there is more legitimacy understood in this space, or for the university to be proactive and take care of their students. That's how that goes. So it's a great topic to talk about, and I hope that we get more conversations about mental health, physical health, and not overtraining in collegiate esports. But that comes, like I said, with a lot of accountability from the university's part and from the coaches and the coaching staff's part, which still a lot of these schools don't have. So it's up to students to be responsible, and a lot of these student leaders have done a phenomenal job coaching, managing, keeping to any of the directions coming from the departments that they're sponsored by, whether it's IT or analytics, or they've created a new space for themselves in the university or hierarchy organization. They've still taken a great deal of accountability onto themselves, but there's still got to be that next level of growth and maturity in collegiate, and I'm wondering where it's going to come from. Because to me, I haven't seen it from NACE, I haven't seen it from TESPA, I haven't seen it from certainly haven't seen it from Ubisoft's Collegiate Rainbow Six League and the way that they entered the scene, which is, by the way, probably one of the biggest community middle fingers I've seen in a long time, in that there's at least three Rainbow Six Leagues that I was covering with the Check Your Six podcast, and this fourth one comes in from Ubisoft. This is like 2 months after they polled and they asked permission of those three leagues, CEA, CRSL, and CR6, hey, can we send a survey out to your players? Can you make sure you get this out and collect the information, send it our way? Sure, no problem. Great. Great to see you have an active interest into this scene of Collegiate Rainbow Six. I don't even think it was 2 months later that Ubisoft announces that Rainbow Six North America Collegiate League is a thing. Didn't take anybody from the other leagues. Didn't want to be involved with their leagues, didn't really leverage the community's interest in a multiple league system, or finding a way to make it work with those communities, because there's some teams that participate in all of those leagues, some in one. There's teams that are figuring out where they send their B league team or their C and D string teams off to another league, and other ones who treat like CR6 as their main league, or CRSL or CEA and so forth. So that's the level of respect I think that collegiate esports gets around the block. It's just that the professionals, whether it's game devs, game publishers, or the other esport leagues that are forming, like CSL, TESPA, NACE, all of them, NACEF. There was the one that tried to do Fortnite High School, which they got through, but it's gotten like zero publicity since. I think it was Kentucky that had a bad take with that, with Play Versus. That's who it was. When that story dropped, so nothing else was said during all that. So I have no idea how that even went. So that's the level of maturity I think we're at right now, and something's going to change. I couldn't tell you what it is, whether it's the amount of money that's in there, whether it's colleges get desperate because none of their students are coming back to campus and their student athletes are all their student traditional sports are having to be canceled. Like I saw one school had to cancel 16 teams because it was all like swimming, water polo, racket, or a whole bunch of kind of minor sports. In terms, when you compare it to college football or college basketball, it's like all the smaller teams, smaller sports. School had to cut 16 teams across men and women's sports, and there was some overlap in what sport it was. It was just men's and women's that were different. And when I think about how all those are being cut, and any like one of those teams probably had the budget to sustain a collegiate esports group for at least a year, probably multiple years, just with that one budget cut. But there's so many other funds that are going on and problems that are needing to be solved at the collegiate level that esports, again, just drops down to the bottom. But as a mechanism for growth and change and being accepting of the times, esports would be a great program to be investing in right now, if you asked me. You're here, so you're asking me. So I'm saying esports, plain and simple, nice and easy. You can do it with all your distant learners. You can do it with all of your students who are on campus. Not that I think there's many campuses that actually have students on campus anymore right now. But when they start returning, there you go. Esports is ready to go. Esports, collegiate esports has been year round now. I mean, there's unofficial collegiate tournaments going on. There's open tournaments where I know college rosters are entering in. There are, and when I say unofficial collegiate tournaments, I just mean that they're not part of NACE, TESPA, all that, and they're kind of third party hosted, and it's not like a league or anything. It's just, here's a tournament, here's a prize pool, go for it. And you know what? That's cool stuff. That is really cool. And it's great to see that these teams get to have consistent, hardcore competitive play. And that's what makes me excited about it. No off season. There's minor leagues, minor tournaments, all that stuff going on, but you can still see teams participate. And when you have rosters and schools that are already kicking off their tryouts in the summer, and they're trying to build that team mentality and that camaraderie over the summer so that when the fall comes in, they're ready to go, as opposed to trying to onboard someone just weeks before a league kicks off. Like, that's a healthy adjustment. And that's some of those business-like thoughts. So those are some of those serious ownership-level decisions and playmaking that need to be happening in collegiate esports. But this was a student-driven decision, which was awesome to see. Just absolutely awesome to see. So I'm excited to see that there are these plays being made, that collegiate esports is still happening, because all these students went home. The ones who can still play, they have computers at home. They're able to play. They're able to work on it. They may not have the best setup, but that's something that can change. And again, with all these other schools canceling other programs, that funding becomes available, or if some amount of it may become available, build a PC, send it off to one of your players. Done. And now you're growing a team, growing a reputation. I think after these esport teams actually getting support for themselves and being able to be self-sustaining through coaching, practicing, doing crowdfunding, merch sales, whatever it takes, tournament hosting, again, whatever it takes. Game nights with students on campus, game nights with students online, again, whatever it takes. There's so many other tools that can help you run that, that it makes it all viable, and viable as a business as well. So I'm really looking for the next big game changer that comes out from collegiate esports, because it's a lot of these little moves and a lot of these jab, jab, jabs. And I'm waiting for that right hook to come in. And it's exciting to know that it's going to happen. There's going to be something that goes on with this Ubisoft Collegiate Rainbow Six League. There's going to be something that really pops off with Valorant, I think. There's going to be a lot going forward. And it's going to be big news regardless of where it comes from. So going off of that, I mean, I'm really looking forward to the fall. The summer's been nice. I've caught tournaments here and there and watched things and played a lot of Valorant myself. So goal two, represent boomers. I mean, when I see Morello getting plat one, I'm like, okay, I'm in good company where I'm at. So that's all fine with me. But yeah, collegiate esports, it's a great place to be. I may not be playing as much Rainbow Six as I should be, but at the same time, I want to build that understanding of these leagues and these players and these universities. And Rainbow Six is just one of those, it's just so big with how many teams are invested in this, and it doesn't get the coverage that it deserves. So I'm excited about this. I will be covering the Ubisoft League. I will be covering CEA. I'll be covering CRSL. I'll be covering CR6. And I got some of the data that I wanted for creating a mega spreadsheet, just so I have this context and history. But, you know, it's been a little difficult to get the data that I've wanted, and being able to tell that story well is not easy. And for my own balance of things, that spreadsheet has not come together, which is unfortunate, but we'll just have to go with what we've got. And so I'll really be following a number of teams that showed well last year, and we'll see how that shows up this season. So that's a long drawn out segue from mental health to where collegiate Rainbow Six is and where that's going. So that's exciting. That's all I've really got to say about collegiate esports right now. Is I'm excited that the scene is still growing. These teams, these esports groups, they're all still talking. The esports leadership Discord is still popping off. The awareness of each other is great. And I mean, even think about this. There's been a number of groups who have published their power rankings for schools for one esport or another. And I mean, I've even done my own power rankings of, like, this is the best social media school, the best collegiate social media. This is the best education system. So on and so forth. I went through my ranked, and others have done their ranked play for COD, for League, for Overwatch, and all that stuff. But every time, every single time, no one comes out and argues, oh, this team's on top of that one, this one's on, like, no one's really arguing for it. But what I see a lot from the coaches, the directors, coordinators, student body presidents, is they're coming out and saying, we love what the other teams are doing. We love that you are giving us this compliment, but it's not about us. It is about building up this space together responsibly and growing each other. That's where this whole space is at. They're all building each other up. This is as if there was the coaches association in the NFL, or where all the owners come together and they say, this is what's best for the NFL. This is what's best for us. We'll just say them, not necessarily the teams and the players, but this is what's best for us and the NFL. And we'll take the selfishness bit out of that, the little greedy part out of that example. But what we get when we see the same kind of mentality of what's best for collegiate esports from all of these groups, what's best for League of Collegiate League of Legends out of all the teams that are in that pack power ranking, and like you get this sense of, hey, thank you for the compliment, but this isn't what it's about. We're not here to start arguments. We're not here to start slinging mud. We're not here to get the fans all rabid and everything, like those power rankings often do. The collegiate participants actually reach out and say, thank you, but everyone's doing a great job, and we don't want to put anybody down. I understand that there's some people who go, oh, that's all mamby-pamby, sissy garbage. Sports are sports, competition, rah. But I just don't care. It's not right for our esports. If people want to get in a tizzy about that, by all means. But right now, where collegiate esports is at, they need to be building each other up. We need those AAA schools reaching back, not down, back to those small schools to get them involved, to say, here's how we can help you. Here's how we got started. Here's how we drove forward. And that camaraderie is actually going to make professional esports healthier. It's going to make high school and junior high and middle school esports better. Peewee esports better. So I really like that take that a lot of the leaders are taking right now, and it's a great example to be said and to be had. Now that does lead me, and I kind of reminded myself on this. Social media, the purpose behind each group is still kind of lacking. Whenever there's the school that's like, yeah, we're all competition, like it doesn't ring true. It comes in as shallow. It comes in as I shouldn't say that. The students are doing the best that they can. They come in with wanting to compete because they want to have their teams out there, or they have a group of students and they're just supporting their students to do something like that. But that next evolution, that next big step, the thing that's going to lead to that level of maturity and consideration by the schools is when those schools see another one come out and say, hey, this is us, this is our take on esports, this is how we want our school to be represented. I think OU does a great job. I think UCI has a great idea behind themselves. I think that, I think Boise State has, Boise State, easy, hands down. Their broadcasting, their level of talent that they're bringing in for competition, diversity, and driving competition forward. But they still put out like 20 hours of recorded content a week, broadcasted content. And it's incredible. It's highly produced. Like, graphics are outstanding. They have Doc Haskell. He's hugely involved, but it's the students who are doing it. He's learning alongside with them, and that's the way it should be. It's very student driven with impact and coaching from faculty. I can't think of a better way to do that. And that identity around broadcasting helps drive how the school can benefit and how they can provide in different ways than just, here's some scholarship or here's some money for a new computer or a new gaming lab. Like, those things are nice and those things will drive your competition forward, but it's the facilities around broadcasting at Boise State that are going to bring that program to the next level. And I need more programs to have that awareness of, we can decide how this fits our vision. Or we have a new vision. We can decide where we want that to go. ECPI, with their multi-campus setup, where they bring their varsity squad together on the main campus, I think that's a great way of sourcing it. They have more students across more space. They can get more diversity there. They have more chances of finding a hot iron talent locally and bringing them in than others who just have a singular campus or a singular esports group that's only on main campus. I'll say it that way, because a lot of schools have satellite programs and everything, so it's not too dissimilar from ECPI, but ECPI has a unified esports aspect, which is really cool. And like LSU, a couple years ago, they had much better social media presence. They had a plan. They had an idea of how they want to execute. They were doing stuff. You see groups like RIT. They are meme lords. Like, there you go. They have a social media identity, but now they need to be creating more social media content on more platforms in different ways and doing more content in general, not just streaming. Like, where's their comedy sketch tour? Where's their faculty streaming? And I mean, I tweeted about this not too long ago, actually, just saying, let's see if I can find it real fast. Come on. It wasn't that long ago. Where is it? Wonder when a college will officially form a stream team. And I'm not talking just the esports program. Like, let's get the faculty on there. Let's get the students in there, all under the school's name, not just the school's esports name, but the school's name. Let them stream their D&D campaign with the school logo on there. Let them stream them playing or just making something. Let them stream their lessons. Let them stream their group work. Encourage them to do so. Let them stream their study sessions. Let them teach the audience what they're learning themselves. There's some cool ideas there. If your school is really about education, or maybe you're a teaching university, shoot, there's an opportunity right there. And so I'm looking for that, for these colleges to make that next step of investment of how do we want streaming and content creation to be a part of our university identity. Again, not just esports, but I think it extends from esports that they see the value that's there, that's in esports. They've invested in it. They've gotten their players up and running. They've got their organization, the pillars of that program set up and ready to go, and they're executing on it. But they still need to take it that next step farther to be like, this is why you want to come to our university. This is why we're still relevant. And I think colleges, especially right now, are challenged with finding relevancy, especially for a lot of degrees that don't go into like hardcore science, that don't go into medical fields, legal fields, and a lot of that kind of stuff. So I'm curious to find out, to see how colleges really recover from the COVID situation, but we'll have to wait until the fall, and even then, probably, my guess, somewhere in the summer of next year. We'll have to wait and see. Well, seeing as we're about 40 minutes into this cast, I figure I might change subjects now. Let's see. Moki, 14-year-old Swedish girl, wins Fortnite event, solo event. Congratulations. That's a huge, huge deal. Some notable players were mentioned who are also in that event. And two things. First, or a few things. One, congratulations. You've just won a competition and probably one of the biggest player bases out there. It was like a 7-game series, and to come out on top, just incredible. Averaging 6 eliminations per game, contributing, I believe it was about half of her points in eliminations outside of average placement, or outside of placement points. But shoot, that's a big frickin' deal. One, follow-up points. One, I can't wait until we can get to a time when we're not calling out that she's a girl. That the winners are women. It shouldn't be historical because it is a woman who has won. I remember when Scarlett won in Korea for StarCraft II. This was a year ago? A year and a half ago? Somewhere in there. I've lost track of time. And there were, it was big mentions. Big mentions. Again, first time a woman has won in Korea. First time a non-Korean has won in Korea. But it was always with the detail. A woman did it. A woman did it. A woman did it. And a lot of those firsts we mark in our society with first woman of color, first woman, first person of color to get these milestones. And you know what? Those are powerful things. Those are great things. But to note that Moki is just a woman and that a 14-year-old woman won. Like, 14-year-old should be enough to get people, whoa, that's crazy. Because being a boy, being a girl doesn't matter. We had a winner, and they were a 14-year-old up against professionals. That's it. If you're still comparing boys to girls in gaming, stop it. There's no reason to do so. I can't wait until being a woman isn't a headline in esports, because it means, hopefully it will mean, they're getting paid fairly. They are not, and we've done something about the toxicity in online play, because it's horrifying. Some of the stuff, I'm sure you've seen it. Gaming has had its Me Too movement over this last summer, and it's still going on. It's still despicable behavior. I hope that anyone and everyone is unfollowing these people so that they are no longer supported by your time, by your money, because they don't deserve it. If they're going to have that kind of treatment of human beings and for being just terrible people, they don't deserve to have a good life. I'll stop. And now Moki, winning. Like I said, performance-wise, averaging 6 eliminations a game over a 7-game series, had 42 points. I believe that equates to 42 eliminations. Holy crap. Like, that's stupid amounts of points and stupid amounts of aggressive play. I would need to go back and watch that event, but that's noteworthy. It is an exceptional performance. Again, not because she's a woman, but because she's 14 years old up against a whole bunch of professionals. And it was over 7 games. It wasn't just a one-and-done win. It wasn't just a best-of-3. It was a marathon of exhaustion. Gearing up for it, practicing for it, like, that's an impressive victory. So Moki, congratulations. You deserve that, hands down. There was another thing. There was another thing with that. I said that I had 2 points. You know what? I can't remember. That's just the way it goes. Yeah. I think that's probably a good stopping point. 45 minutes long. Got a little fire, got a little heat up in here. Talked about what I'm doing, talked about collegiate esports, talked about where things are at. I would love to know more about what questions people have about collegiate esports, about their opinions of it, their opinions of the podcast, of my presentation style, what more I could be providing, who you want me to be more like in this space. You know what? This deserves a call out. You know, for anyone who has heard or seen my presentation from the College Esports Expo back in February, I posted a video to YouTube. You can look me up and find it there, or you can find the podcast episode on the Summoning Hour. So anchor.fm/the Summoning Hour. You can find that episode back a few weeks or a few episodes. And one of the people I gave credit to was Red Eye for kind of eventually grooming the idea of what I can do in this space. And he was called out unfairly, and he was ostracized unfairly, and he had personal matters brought into things, and his children brought into the conversation, which is not fair in the slightest. It was a terrible, terrible exchange, especially during a time when, mental health was not in everyone's favor, as it was still relatively new being in quarantine. This was before a lot of rest of the world started coming out of it and started seeing some better results than here in the U.S. But he retired from esports. He cut ties with so many things and even social media and everything. And he needed to do it for his own health and to not be part of a system that treats him like that. And I could totally understand bowing out like that. But how frustrating to grow something to what it is, to be a part of that, to really be one of the first true advocates of esports that stuck with it, that sacrificed so much just to be bullied out. And so I still want to give Red Eye a shout out for what he has done, what he has accomplished, and what he helped me accomplish. So thank you very much for that. And I hope someday you get to come back to your passion, your grind, your hustle, and grow some more talent and help make this space a better place. Your voice still has so much weight to it that I would hate to see it go to waste. Yeah, I think that's a good place to end. Thank you, everybody. You can follow me on social media pretty much everywhere at Warlock Recall. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Those are the big ones right now, I think. Those are the main ones. Efuse, I'm on there as well. Am I on there as Warlock Recall? I don't remember. Maybe I'm on there as Joe Belisek. J-O-E-B-E-L-O-U-S-E-K. If you want to spell it, look me up on Efuse. Let's see. It doesn't even say I'm signed in. Great. Well, I'll have to fix that. But there's that. You can check out the podcast, like I said, anchor.fm/thesummoninghour. If you want to leave feedback, you go to the same address and you add a slash message, and you will be brought to a spot in your browser. Or if you download the Anchor podcasting app, you can leave messages directly through the app. You can even listen to the podcast directly through there too. But that feedback comes back to me. I can put it into the podcast if you'd like to be on the show. If you have questions, concerns, if there's any way I can help you, that would be a great way to get in touch with me and help me help you. So there's that. If you want to listen in on the Check Your Six podcast, again, anchor.fm/checkyoursix. And you can add that very same slash message to that podcast URL if you wanted to leave messages for me and my co-host, Syntax, when we discuss Rainbow Six. So that's all I've got this time around. I look forward to seeing all of you students in the fall. I look forward to finding out how your summers went and growing collegiate esports. If there's something I can do for you, something I can do for this space, please feel free to reach out. I am all ears. Later, taters.